Britain has been rocked by scandal upon scandal from its police force. The organisation has been repeatedly found wanting when it comes to stamping out corrupt and criminal behaviour in its ranks. My name is Michael Doherty. I'm a civil liberties campaigner and founder of Justice Now. I seek to bring about fundamental change to the systems of police accountability in the UK. Lee Bulkwell died in suspicious circumstances in the summer of 2002. The police have declared it a freak accident, but his father suspects murder. Les had concerns about the conduct of the police at the scene of Lee's death, and dozens of misconduct charges have been upheld against officers who investigated it. Despite countless reviews of the case, Lee's father feels we are no closer to seeing justice for his son.
He said that the arms and hands were not part of the trauma in the drum. Well, if they weren't part of the trauma in the drum, where did the injuries come from? They're on the hands and the arms.
And was then placed in the on the concrete mixer. The people who owned the farm there would have switched on the cement mixer. There's absolutely no doubt that that could not have happened by an accident.
I've come to the end of the line, Upminster, the very furthest east in London. In July 2002, a man by the name of Lee Bulkwell died in this suburb in the middle of the night. When emergency services arrived on scene, they didn't know what to make of it. They found a dead man hanging out of a cement mixer at 1 a.m. Was this a bizarre accident or something more sinister? The dead man's name was Lee Bulkwell. And even now, 12 years later, his father is still fighting to get to the truth of what happened to his son.
The scene that they found was a lorry parked, and my son's body was wedged between the drum of that lorry, which was a cement mixing lorry, and the chassis.
Here you can see one of the lorry's two identical access hatches. Lee's arms and head have been trapped inside the hatch. His body was outside as the drum had revolved. His body was caught between the chassis of the vehicle and the drum as it turned, causing severe injuries to his torso. The situation seems suspicious, purely by virtue of how unusual it is. Tony Bennett represents and advises Lee Bulkwell.
The only thing really for the police to decide was this foul play or not. And some of the ambulance and fire crew were very observant, and there were all sorts of indications at that stage that this could not have been an accident.
This is CCTV footage from Baldwin's farm where Lee died. The ambulance arrives and the crew rush to the concrete mixer. There was nothing they could do. Lee had died instantly. One paramedic wrote in his pocketbook that this death could be due to foul play. Another also felt that it was a suspicious death, and a third reluctant to touch the body in case they damaged important evidence.
According to the initial investigation, how did Lee die?
The initial investigation worked on the basis that it was an accident, although around about 2:30 a.m. on that morning, there must have been some honest police officers at the scene because they declared it a suspicious death.
The police would revert to the opinion that this was a freak accident and would state that they have investigated all possibilities thoroughly. They maintain that Lee Bulkwell and Simon Bromley were cleaning the inside of the concrete mixer, using drills to remove hardened concrete from the inside of the drum. They had taken it in turns to climb out, switch on the engine, and very slowly rotate the drum so they could clean the next section of it. On one occasion, Simon Bromley went to switch the engine on, and a mechanical failure caused the drum to immediately and rapidly spin. Lee had for some reason tried to climb out through a maintenance hatch and was halfway out when this failure occurred, trapping him between the drum and the chassis, killing him instantly. Les Bulkwell and Tony Bennett strongly disagree with the police's assessment and believe a very different sequence of events unfolded. This is the farm where Lee met his death back in 2002. It's owned by the Bromley family.
a family that's had a checkered history with the police over the years. Lee was employed there back in 2002 when he met his death. Les, his father, believes that there was criminal activity involved in the death of his son.
And how do you believe Lee died?
My belief from information we've received is that Simon Bromley suspected my son of having a fling or an affair with his partner, Sue Lawrence. And he was called, he had actually left at 11:35. We have no doubt that he'd socialised with them, perhaps had a lager, game of pool, and left. But they had had a large delivery of cocaine to that farm that night. And my belief is that they got high on the cocaine. They suspected Lee of having an affair. We believe he was called back, attacked soon after being called back, badly attacked.
And was then placed by members of the family at the farm on the concrete mixer. The people who owned the farm there would have switched on the cement mixer, and the inspection hole would have come round, taken his head and shoulders below, left the rest of his body outside. That's quite clear from the photographs. There's absolutely no doubt that that could not have happened by an accident.
Les eventually managed to obtain photos from his son's post-mortem. He points out injuries on Lee's body that are not explained by the police's version of events, and says that they support his theory of how Lee died.
But what we believe is that something's been tied around his wrist, and a forensic photographer has given that opinion. The bloke has spent 20 to 30 years photographing these sort of things. And he said, unfortunately, Mr. Ball, well, I have to tell you that it appears your son has been restrained by something tied around his wrist. Secondly, this, what I say, is a cut on the palm. The opinion given by people who are not regarded as experts, but have experienced similar things, say that looks like a classic defence wound where Lee has protected himself and grabbed the blade, and as they pulled the blade out, it's cut through the palm of the hand. In Dr. Swift's original opinions of Lee's, he said that the arms and hands were not part of the trauma in the drum. Well, if they weren't part of the trauma in the drum, where did the injuries come from? They're on the hands and the arms. For example, he said the hands and arms were not part of the trauma in the drum. Where did all this come from then? He's telling us they come from somewhere else, isn't he?
Yeah.
But the police, when you try to speak to them about this, they ignore these as though they're not there. We need answers.
The police pathologist's opinion was that all of Lee's injuries were either caused by the drum of the concrete mixer or were caused after death by the fireman's attempts to free him from the lorry. It was a long and difficult process. The police have stuck to this view through several examinations of Lee's body. Les had concerns about the conduct of the police at the scene of Lee's death and did not feel that the investigation was carried out properly. Complaints about this were lodged. Had key witnesses been identified and interviewed in a proper way? Was evidence seized and secured in a timely manner? It was 2003 when these complaints were made. Essex Police carried out an investigation into these complaints, but came to the conclusion that the officers involved had done their jobs properly and that the overall operation had been executed as it should have been. This was not the last that Essex Police would hear of these complaints, but more on that later. Les says his concerns with the police were not limited to the investigations at the scene of his son's death. Many of his interactions with the police since that night in 2002 have caused him massive concern. The issue of what happened to Lee's clothing is one such concern for his father.
We was led to believe right up until October of 2002 that the police still had the clothing, but it was needed for forensics. Well, we now know that was a lie because they never done no forensics. And as has come out in the last 18 months, 2 years, documents have been found that show that the SIO, Graham Ball, had ordered the destruction of my son's clothing within 24 hours of him being removed from the drum.
And is there any explanation as to why they destroyed evidence so early on in the case?
They said that Lee's partner didn't want them. But that's got nothing to do with forensics. I didn't want them, but I wanted them to keep them and do a forensic study of the clothing, because we thought there'd been something untoward happened and there could have been a transfer of body fluids or DNA or whatever.
The Bromleys had a CCTV system at Baldwin's farm. Many cameras all linked into one system. Les requested a copy of the CCTV after viewing some of it with his daughter at a police station. But the tapes he was sent were incomplete. There was 1 hour of footage missing in between the two tapes, and more importantly, they showed the view of only one camera. When Les complained about this, he got a strange reaction. The police sent a new tape without acknowledging their earlier mistake. The new tape matched what Les had seen at the police station, showing several other camera views at the very start, but only for fractions of a second each. The police footage from the morning after Lee's death shows the concrete mixer parked opposite the Bromleys' property. On the side of the house, you can just make out a CCTV camera. Here it can be seen more clearly, just above the fence, pointing out over the road towards the concrete mixer. This frame from the CCTV tape is undoubtedly filmed by that camera, just above the fence, and has a clear view of where the concrete mixer was parked. Footage from this camera would solve Lee's death in a heartbeat. So where is it? The police assert that this single second of video is all they have from this crucial camera. Did the police at the scene of Lee's death fail to seize all of the necessary tapes? Had the footage been tampered with before they got there? After 12 years, it's impossible to know. Terry Haynes was the name of the officer who supplied the first two tapes to Les. And later, charges of misconduct were upheld against him for doing so.
Well, the importance about these tapes is they do not carry the Essex Technical Department's logo or a what's name number? A record number of...
Job number.
Or job number, whatever you want to call it. So if a police officer supplied tapes that weren't made by the Technical Department, who has made them? He's going to have to answer the question.
Haynes resigned when he was told that he would be interviewed by the Independent Police Complaints Commission.
What he also said was he made this statement to the IPCC that he's not prepared to cooperate with the investigation or the inquiry. That is in black and white. Mm-hmm. I wonder why. It's funny, that, isn't it?